Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, crazy martinis for you, as usual. And kudos to Jim Garrity for being here today. He only had a one-day weekend, because he was at CPAC Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. And we'll get to CPAC in the final martini of the day. But the good martini takes us to the Florida governor's race, as well as the ongoing Obamacare debate. Charlie Crist, who back in 2010 called Obamacare devastating, cheered the Tea Party for working to repeal it and promised he would do the same if given a chance. Now he loves it. He was in Washington for a number of things, including the Gridiron Dinner, but he also was appearing on State of the Union with Candy Crowley, and she talked about a number of things that are concerning to Florida residents, particularly seniors. She said there's 300,000 people in Florida who got kicked off of plans they liked because they didn't meet the requirements in the new law. And then she also talked about the problem seniors are having with Medicare Advantage, and here's how the exchange went from there.
But certainly in Florida, there is real fear that seniors who are using the Medicare Advantage plan will, in fact, see their list of doctors shrink. None of that. You don't think any of that will happen? What do you worry about?
I don't think that will happen. And I think that people on the other side are using that as a fear tactic, and it's wrong. And I think what's important to remember
is some did lose their insurance that they had. I mean, that's a fact.
That's why we have the Affordable Care Act. Exactly why is to make sure that they don't lose it in the future, that they have some place that they can go, that they can get health care, and that it's more affordable than what they may have had before.
So, Jim, there you go. The reason we have the Affordable Care Act is so people who lost their plan due to the Affordable Care Act can get coverage.
If you stare too long at that statement, it kind of sucks you in as a Mobius strip that folds in upon itself, and you end up going in the same circle over and over again. Worth noting, by the way, first of all, it's very intriguing how much discussion of Obamacare still acts as if it's something that's waiting to happen, when in fact it's still going on. You can kind of tell that certain folks in the political realm really don't update their talking points or the way they see these issues, because it's going on. And when he says, look, people will get better plans, some will, but a lot of people won't. And the whole point of that was the message of if you like your plan, was you keep your plan, was that allegedly this legislation wasn't going to force change on anybody, right? If you like the status quo, you could stick with it. And it turned out to be a lie. And Charlie Crist just can't seem to get around that. Now, I'm going to point to a great quote from Rick Wilson, who I hope everybody's following on Twitter. He is a very smart, acerbic, quick-witted Florida political consultant. And they were doing a profile in the Washington Post on Charlie Crist. And at one point, Wilson's quote was, Charlie Crist has the intellectual candle power of oatmeal, but he's very good at working a room and he's got charisma. And that's what Crist is going to try to, you know, do. As much as we look at his lawyer ads and roll our eyes and say he looks ridiculous like a huckster, it works in Florida. He's apparently a very easy to get along with guy. And so when he works a room or he's working the stump, that's him at his strength. So if you're Rick Scott, you got to engage him on the issues. You know, look for moments like this in which it's very clear Charlie Crist hasn't really been paying attention to the details of these policies. And he knows that because he's a Democrat, he's supposed to be a cheerleader for Obamacare. And that means every bad thing people are saying about Obamacare has to be a lie. It's singing from the Harry Reid playbook. And that's not going to play well with every Floridian who has actually lost their plan.
Yeah, as Candy Crowley mentioned, 300,000 of those, plus the Medicare Advantage fears are probably quite real based on everything we've seen and read at this point. Jim, just a quick follow-up here. You know, a lot of Republicans in 2008 and 2012, as well as Democrats in 2012, had fun with Mitt Romney's evolving positions on a number of issues. If you're running the Rick Scott campaign right now, how much fun are you having putting Charlie Crist from 2006 or 2010 up against Charlie Crist of 2014?
We're used to, oh, okay, you run right in the primary, and then you shift a bit more to the left on the general, and you try to fudge things, and as polling numbers shift, politicians change their tune. No. Charlie Crist has flipped on everything. Charlie Crist is running against laws that he signed into law back when he was governor last time. So the most dramatic way I could come up with it was the idea of Charlie Crist of 2006 – then a Republican, proclaiming what a conservative Republican he was, traveling forward in time to run against the Charlie Crist of today because he's such a completely different guy. And maybe the Charlie Crist from the future will be a de Blasio-like liberal to run against him too. So it's a very frustrating state of affairs. According to some voters in Florida, it doesn't really matter. You can completely, totally flip your position on absolutely everything. And it's just good old Charlie, you know. Agent Orange, as John Kerry called him.
Yeah, and the sad part, as you alluded to there, is that he's probably the favorite right now, but it's certainly anybody's game down there. All right, on to martini number two now, and this is a martini that we all saw coming in the last few weeks and certainly the last few days when the Crimean Parliament voted to just leave the Ukraine and join Russia, like it has the power to do that. But apparently, because the Russians want it to happen, they do have that power. But there's going to be an all-important popular vote, which I'm sure is going to be a nail-biter on the 16th. But here's Bob Gates with the depressing analysis on Fox News Sunday with Chris Wallace.
I think he does not want to send troops into eastern Ukraine. I think that he would prefer to achieve his goals without that kind of blatant use of military force outside of Crimea, and frankly, I'd be surprised if he did do that.
Secretary Gates?
But I do not believe that Crimea will slip out of Russia's hands.
You think Crimea's gone?
I do.
Pretty sobering, Jim.
It is, and I don't think, you want to tell Bob Gates that he's wrong, but there's not a lot of easy ways to imagine a scenario in which Russia gives up the Crimea or the, unidentified masked men who are totally not Russian, even though they're speaking Russian and carrying Russian weapons and driving Russian troop transports and stuff like that. The question now is what happens now and whether it moves in there. I'll give a little bit of credit that the White House has seemed to have woken up to this a day late and a dollar short, but we're going to be meeting with the Ukrainian prime minister this week, and they're talking to all of our allies and stuff. This is what happens when you take your eye off the ball and you get quasi-isolationist, is you have de facto conquerors coming in and taking bites out of neighboring territories because they think the consequences won't be severe enough. In other intriguing discussions coming out this week is that, look, let's say Putin got really more aggressive with Ukraine and decided he did want to take a big chunk out of eastern Ukraine. What would the EU do to him? What would we be willing to do to them? There's a certain argument that says not much of anything. We'll write a check. We'll send aid, but we're not really interested in doing anything resembling fighting. And in a contest like this, it goes to the guy who wants it more. This dispirited, quasi-isolationist, disengaged, exhausted West, not just the United States, but all the European capitals, there's a vacuum there. People know that we don't want to get involved with any more of this stuff. We're exhausted from Iraq and Afghanistan and everything else, and Europe doesn't have much of a military anymore. So it's there for the taking for as aggressive as Putin wants to be. And I guess we're going to see in the coming weeks and months just how aggressive he wants to be.
All right. On to a much more complicated set of diplomatic affairs. And that's the state of the Republican Party, which was on display at CPAC for 3 days, Thursday, Friday and Saturday. Jim, there's obviously some differences of opinion on a number of issues and questions about the effectiveness of the leadership and so forth. But it seemed like a pretty warm reception across the board for the major speeches. And the base seems pretty fired up.
George Will had said something on one of the Sunday shows this week, when she said, look, when the Republicans are unified, the media says that they're lockstep drones. And when they're fighting, it's civil war and their party is going to be torn. I would say at CPAC, I didn't really see a ton of evidence of a tremendously divided conservative movement. Christie got a warm welcome there, for example. If you were there and you're a Republican, you generally, had a pretty warm welcome. I will make a bit of a caveat, though, Greg, which is that basically, if you're a Republican and you're speaking to a lot of the CPAC attendees in the evening hours or even mid-afternoon hours, there was a good chance that a chunk of your audience was drunk. No, I'm kidding. Let's just say that the party had started early. And if you were speaking to them in the morning, you probably weren't going to get booed or hissed or anything like that, because a good portion of the audience was hungover. I exaggerate slightly, but this is a festive get-together for a lot of conservatives. So in addition to being kind of unrepresentative in that this is the diehards of the diehards, the most passionate, the folks who are willing to shell out to travel to Washington, D.C. or just outside Washington, D.C. to attend the conference, people are there to have a good time. They're seeing friends and networking politically and seeing people who are like-minded. Everyone seemed to be in a fairly good mood. And so I don't know if this is a huge indicator for 2014 or 2016, but I think we can say that some of the talk about deep-rooted divisions within the conservative movement are a little overstated, at least in how they're expressed. I mean, there was, because of what was mentioned in our last martini, the Russian moves in Ukraine and Crimea, there was a little more talk of foreign policy than you might have expected 6 months ago. And, Rand Paul and Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio and some of these guys are going to come along on a slightly different viewpoint. Actually, in some cases, clearly different viewpoints. But I didn't see a ton of you crazy warmonger versus you cowardly isolationist type talk. I mean, maybe McCain and Rand Paul got at it a little bit, but McCain didn't speak at CPAC. And, you know, I think sometimes this talk of the Republican Party tearing itself apart has to be taken with many grains of salt and probably a margarita to go with it as well.
Well, speaking of a grain of salt, let's talk very briefly about the straw poll, which in previous years has been indicative of absolutely nothing. But Rand Paul did win and won quite handily. And one of the reasons for that is because the people in attendance at CPAC skewed pretty young. One of the big worries about the party is the millennial generation. And Rand Paul seems to be wildly popular, at least among conservative circles, with the millennials and apparently on some other issues as well. They certainly trended his way on drones and so forth. So my question to you is, do you think Rand Paul's a guy who is uniquely qualified to relate to that voting bloc that the party's done such a poor job of connecting with?
Somebody observed on Twitter that if Rand Paul hadn't won, it actually would have been a bigger story, because he won last year. I've noticed no one remembers him winning last year, so that shows you how much the staying power of winning the straw poll at CPAC. Having been there, stand with Rand kids with their T-shirts and all that stuff, you know, encouraging people to vote for him in the straw poll, they were by far the most active group. In other words, like, I don't know whether, you know, Rand Paul himself was back in this, or this was just a national grassroots people, or maybe some of the descendants of the Ron Paul crowd that drove Ron Paul to victories in CPAC straw polls in the past. Clearly, the Rand Paul folks are putting the biggest effort into winning the straw poll. So their win shouldn't be that huge a deal. Now, even amongst the folks who are talking foreign policy and who clearly were not on the same page as Rand Paul, were saying, he's a guy I want at the table, even if I don't want him at the head of the table. Meaning that I think he is increasingly respected in the party, and he can appeal to young people. He's articulating a more libertarian-minded message, and also he's reaching out to minority groups and willing to take the GOP message to places like Howard University and Detroit and places that may not be necessarily warmly received. And so, you know, he's going to be a major player. The question will be whether he has the ability to break out beyond the natural demographics of folks who are going to like him, and that remains to be seen. But I think it's safe to say, look, this, you know, as a lot of people expect, Rand Paul says, I'm running for president. He's not going to be a joke candidate. He's not going to be somebody who's going to top out at about, you know, 9 or 10% and just be up there on the debate to, you know, make a few comments and write a book later.
Well, there's a couple more straw polls to go. Many other polls that probably won't mean that much between now and 2016. But as I like to say, let's worry about 2014 before we get to 2016. Jim, get some rest if you can today, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow.
All right. See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to join us again on Tuesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.